F1A. Number 10B.
So, in the first horizontal, I think we could see clearly that they always give, so to say, the keynote for all the rest, what is under that first horizontal. They just define first what the Christ has in view, what the Christ wants to attain. Then in the second horizontal, every one of those minor prophets showed very clearly that what is necessary is a change of standpoint. That enforces really the retranslation. When it comes to Christianity vertical, which we have epitomized as the disappearance of evil and the appearance of good, is rendered inescapable. I wanted to bring out with rendered inescapable that is the whole Christ idea, the Christ matrix, that Christ doesn't leave error chance to escape, that it is so forcible that it is inescapable. It will happen. So that error will disappear and the idea will be established. And this is what one sees right through those horizontal prophets. That's actually not a good expression, horizontal prophets. They were always vertical when they were walking. I mean, those prophets on the third horizontal, Amos, Micah, Zephaniah, Malachi. We can remember them very clearly, I'm sure, that Amos was constantly hammering, and he said, well, I come down, the Lord roars from Zion, and he comes down to Jerusalem and lays it light, right flat. I am the destroying factor in that Christ translation. He destroys the opposite of mind, the opposite of spirit, the opposite of soul, the opposite of principles of life, truth and love. And at the end, he establishes the tabernacle of David. You can see everything is destroyed, what is of the nature of Edom or Esau, everything that is unlike God. He says, I wipe that away, I destroy that. But I am not just a destroyer. Destroying evil means establishing truth, establishing good. And so he ends up with that positive tone of the tabernacle of David will be established. Micah, as you remember, Micah is the prophet of men. Oh man, Micah is the prophet of the daughter of Zion, is the prophet of the motherhood that brings to birth man, oh man, and therefore is that prophet which says, I destroy everything within the mortal that is mortal, but I show the way out. I show the way out. I'm not just a destroyer that destroys everything in man that is mortal. There is a remnant, and therefore that remnant is that to which the motherhood sends, the daughter of science can give birth. So out of Bethlehem Ephrates will come the one who will rule Israel. Because it says, don't you know that you have a remnant within you, that you have a king within you, that you have a counselor within you, that you have a king that will reign in you and over the world. So that can only be brought out if first everything that is not of the nature of man, of the old man, is destroyed first. Just as in scientific obstetrics, that starts also out that we have first to detach mortal, material concept and thought from the idea or else the idea has no room to come forth. We first must make room for the idea. Making room for the idea means sweeping away everything that is not God-like. And that sweeping away is seen very clearly in Zephaniah. He is the sweeper that sweeps away. Everything is swept away. His whole text is pervaded by this term. I will cut down, I will drive out, I will destroy, I will root up everything, all the nation, and so on, and so on. But he doesn't leave it at that. Then he shows the whole glory of the universe. How the fields are flourishing, how the cattle are multiplying, how everything is just in fullness and in perfection, and shows really a wonderful a picture of paradise, paradaic, what is that? No adjective for paradise. What a pity, huh? Well, he shows a picture of paradise. Yeah. So everything else is being destroyed. Malachi shows that too. He said, you can never be a real priest, a true priest, a pure priest, if you don't get rid first of your false divine, of your false service, of your false offerings, of your lame offerings, of your sick offerings, of your polluted offerings. First get away with that. You can't be a good priest and say, I'm a good priest, and then afterwards I will destroy what is wrong. It must go the other way around. First you have to get rid of the mortal and the mortal sense of service. Then only is made room, really, for a good service. So that's the horizontal of Christianity. So what's the purpose of going horizontally? Well, as I said, perhaps in treatment, in working out things with the Christ matrix, we may usually go through the verticals, because then we see the Christ in its power at work, how it comes down, and how it comes to every situation and solves every situation. So that's perhaps the most important part of the matrix. But also sometimes it is good just to go and look at the horizontals. Just when we perhaps are in distress and think that things don't work out as we feel they should work out, and we don't see yet the end of the problem and so on, perhaps we are very much comforted by going horizontally through the horizontal of C, of Christianity, and get there the message we said, don't worry, it will come. Even if you only see in every one of them, first see destroying, 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 destroying. If you see everything goes wrong, goes wrong, goes wrong, goes wrong, there is always at the end the promise that it goes as long wrong until error really destroys itself, and then the remnant is there. You always get the sense of the remnant is there, and the remnant then will blossom out of the ashes and will come forth from the ashes and build up something completely new. That out of the roots of David, a new tree, a new branch will come out. That's, so to say, the promise that we find in those prophets there. Then naturally when we go to the last horizontal, to D, the understanding of God, that's actually a terrific thing. They are the major prophets, and they take up hundreds of pages, and it's not so easy to have an overall view just summarized. But I think we have touched the core of those four prophets by saying the common denominator of all of these prophets is actually understanding. That we must understand. We must understand. Now, Moses would say, you must understand. And he can't achieve very much with a command, you must understand. And it's no use to say to a student, you must understand. We only can say, look here, it is understanding that does the trick. But what understanding means and how we get understanding, that's another question. And the prophets show at least that side of understanding, which is molded by the impact of the Christ, where we can see under the Christ aspect, the Christ has a terrific interest to come to us and establish within us the longing for understanding. So I have seen we can never force people to understand Christian Science. It's just not possible. We can't force them. We can perhaps force a kid to learn arithmetic and calculating with numbers. Perhaps we can force him and say, come on, and now you sit here and you repeat it and you learn it. I'm sitting next to you until you can learn it and so on until you get it. Perhaps that is possible, but not with science. We just cannot force anybody to be able to understand. This is quite a difficult part or section or aspect of our teaching. One can teach what one knows, but one cannot force the student to understand. And it's not wholly dependent, or not perhaps not even in the majority or in the most percentage of the case, the question, is the teacher teaching good? Is he a good teacher or is he not a good teacher? It doesn't even depend very much on that. It can help, but it all depends what the student has in himself. Does he want to learn? Does he yearn for understanding? Does he see the purpose of understanding? Most students don't see the purpose of understanding. Why should I understand? Why shouldn't I believe in? Why shouldn't I just let inspiration take hold of me? Why shouldn't I live just by spiritual sense, by inspiration, by exaltation, by emotion? Why not? Who tells me that I should understand? This is not what every religion says. This is specific for Christian Science. No other religion says you have to understand. Religion says you come to church, you do your beads. Yes, all that, you obey your rituals. Sorry, you do that. But they don't say, look here, you have to go through a school, and in that school you have to learn step by step, stone upon stone, how to understand God. So we will always be surrounded by people, by friends, by the family that do not want to understand Christian Science. And we cannot force them. We can never force our kids to love Christian Science. We cannot force them. And so what we can do is to see that the Christ wants that everybody understands God. That we can see for everybody. That the Christ comes to everybody. And that everybody has its own Christ. When I say its own Christ, it's actually not a different Christ than the Christ itself. There is only one Christ. But it comes, that Christ comes to everyone in a different way, at a different time, under different conditions, under different experiences, and I don't know what. Our job is not to force anyone to understand. We can't. But what we can, and that works always, is to see that the Christ here, as the prophets tell us, has an utmost interest to handle everyone so that he is brought to the point where he wants to understand God. may take time, that may take bad experience, that may take all sorts of things that can come overnight, that can last long, but that's the Christ's responsibility, not ours. We don't have that responsibility. If the Christ can't do it, we can't do it either. Just give it up. What the Christ can't do, we shouldn't think we can do. So let's put it into the responsibility, I would say into the bosom of the Christ, into the heart of the Christ, and let everyone be there and be molded in the womb of the Christ, and the Christ will always know when and where and through what ways and means it is going to act. What we have to see and can see is the last horizontal, where we can see that the Christ comes to Israel, comes to all of us, comes to the whole world, and brings the whole world to such a crisis as in Israel, that Israel begins to rethink the whole situation. So that Israel began to rethink, where am I? On what path am I? And begins to see that it does not know God. That it does not know God. But that therefore it should know God. And that therefore only at that point there is a solution to a situation. Think of it. We have today the world, in the world of sciences, where practically in the Western world already every third or every fourth or fifth has an academic background under the youngsters, where that academic background will be always a greater percentage and percentage of the people. And we'll have a world of scientists with a small s. They don't know God. And if science does not know God, it stands on sand. It builds on sand. Because they only manage effects. They only try to mold effects, to change effects, and not cause. Cause is the divine principle that is behind the whole of evolution. Behind those billions of years of evolution is the divine principle. And as long as the scientists do not turn to understand God, they are like Israel, where you can say, well, an ox knows his crib, and an ass knows his master. But Israel does not know. The world, the Western world, the Eastern world does not know God, and therefore there cannot be a solution. And thank God that more and more the scientists begin to realize that they are working in the field of effects, not in the field of cause. And if we don't know the cause, the effects are not right. And we don't know how to manipulate the effects if we don't know the real cause. And this is where we are today in the prophetic age. Today we are Israel, the scientists are Israel that do not know God. They know a lot about effects, but not about cause. And this is such a simple reasoning. It's so simple that one thinks, how on earth is this not seen? Why on earth do we believe in effect, in a creation, in a universe, in an earth, in people that are effects and not cause, without asking what is the cause, the first cause? What is the nature of that principle that apparently must be at work, or else there would not have been an evolution? I would not have been an evolution. So here is Isaiah. And so we can go on to Jeremiah and look into the future. Jeremiah to us is already the future, because Jeremiah says, look here, I am going to put that law and that understanding into the heart of each individual. Each individual will long to know God. He will long to know God. He will not anymore go to the church, to the priest, to the pope, to the bishop, and ask what is God, and ask what is life, and what is life all about, and what was before birth, and what is after death. He will go to God and ask God, and God will put him into his heart so that he will know it. And everybody will know it, and will no more have to ask his neighbor, show me the law. He will know it. And then, when that happens, can you see what we have to do in the present world if we are really practitioners in the world? We are not interested too much in headaches and corns and things like that to heal, where we are much more interested to heal world consciousness and sit back and say, there is a Christ at work, that Christ is universal, and that universal Christ comes to each one and knocks at his heart and at his understanding. In one way or the other, it begins to knock. We don't know how, we don't know when, we don't know in which way, we only know he does. And that's the consciousness we should entertain. And then, when we entertain that, then Jeremiah will be fulfilled. And when Jeremiah is being touched in each one of us, then Ezekiel comes around the corner and says, hello, look here, you want to know God, I tell you how to know God. I tell you exactly how to know God. I have a clear-cut educational program. I show you how to learn God through the days of creation. I show you how to learn God through the foresight of the holy city. If you put these two great categories together and combine them, you have the wheels within wheels. They begin to form a calculus. With that calculus, it says, you can measure the whole world. You can calculate every part in your life with these ideas. You have now a measuring rod. So he's the Son of God, all Son of God, 99 times Son of God, Son of God. Go and measure, Son of God, measure, Son of God, measure. Calculate, calculate ideas. And if we do that, and take heed and learn that method of Ezekiel, then we become a Daniel. Then we become a Daniel that actually begins to use that calculus of ideas and is able, like Daniel, to have the wisdom that surpasses all the wisdom of the magicians and the astrologers and the natural scientists, and sees the signs of spirit, the signs of life. Which natural scientist can handle his life? Perhaps not one percentage. What's the use of natural science if you can't handle the most important thing about the world? Most important thing is our life. What's the use of it? What's the use of being able to manipulate matter and to manipulate information and to manipulate energy? What's the use of it if you don't know how to manage your own life? So that's the point of Daniel. He learned from Ezekiel the way, the wheels is within wheels, the calculus, and applied it, and he showed that in every situation in which he was being drawn into, no matter what that situation was, no matter if it was the burning furnace, no matter if the lion's den, no matter what it was, he always found the solution and came out fine. just fine. And so we can see that sometimes going through a horizontal like this is a terrific picture, which we can really see spiritually and perhaps get the comfort from that picture and see where the way leads us to. Now we know the way, now let's go the way, like Daniel. All right, tomorrow we'll start with reading the Bible. We'll take some texts, and then from that point on, we'll try to see how we arrive at the Christ matrix, taking the inductive way. In order to do that, we first perhaps spend 2 days in exercising ourselves in deciphering or decoding the biblical text. That's the groundwork one has to do first. All right, tomorrow.